I'm Kira Chadwick.
And I'm Dante Trunzo. And we are members of the MLJ podcast team. You are listening to A Tale of One City, Toronto's Battle for Electoral Independence, an MLJ podcast.
Home to over 3 million people, Toronto is Canada's largest city and known as one of the most multicultural cities in the world. Today, cities like Toronto face pressing challenges: urbanization, the housing crisis, climate change, and now COVID-19. Despite the importance of Canadian cities in our daily lives, municipal governments still find themselves at the whim of the provincial legislators, with no autonomy of their own defined in the Canadian Constitution. In a recent Supreme Court case, Toronto and Ontario, the battle between provincial and municipal power took the stage. This case, involving the implementation of an Ontario law that reduced the size of Toronto City Council during an election, is a landmark decision on freedom of expression and unwritten constitutional principles. In this episode, we'll discuss the case and its implications on constitutional law and explore how municipalities are empowered to solve the problems that they and their citizens face.
Our guest today is Natalie DeRosier, the principal of Massey College. Principal DeRosier is a sharp legal academic, having served as the president of the Law Commission of Canada, the General Counsel for the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, and the Dean of both civil and common law schools at the University of Ottawa. In addition to her academic work, Principal DeRosier served at the Legislative Assembly of Ontario in various capacities until 2019. Principal DeRosier offers a unique perspective balancing both her technical knowledge of constitutional law and how it works in practice.
At the time of Confederation in 1867, when the vast majority of Canadians lived in rural areas, provincial legislatures were assigned exclusive power over municipal institutions in the province. This means that provinces have authority over their cities, and still do today. However, in the 21st century, cities face complex challenges in meeting the needs of their diverse citizens. We asked Principal DeRosier to expand on how the Constitution outlines the scope of provincial control over municipalities and the impact that this has on our cities.
So it's interesting that we have a constitution that provides provinces as power over municipal institutions. In the 19th century, in the Constitution Act of 1867, we delegate to the province an oversight over municipalities. I think there's still some question as to what was intended there. Was it supposed to be that essentially municipalities were creatures of the province, did not exist outside of provincial whim, which is the way it has been interpreted? And it's interesting to look at the origin of that maxim that municipalities are the legal creatures of the province, because obviously it's not correct. Municipalities, the city of Montreal, for example, existed way before 1867. And similarly, many of the other cities across Canada pre-existed the Constitution of 1867. Part of my work now has been, prior to the Supreme Court case, to try to explore whether our Constitution is a living tree. Are they new ways of conceptualizing the way in which we understand the power and the role of municipalities in the context of the 21st century? Because most Canadians live in cities. We know that the prosperity of a country depends a lot on cities, and that's also where big problems exist. The question is, are they well equipped to deal with these problems? Are they ways in which the Constitution prevents them from doing the agents of prosperity, the agents of equality that they should be?
For example, only provincial governments can enact changes to municipal structures, including the power to determine their existence. During the 2018 Toronto municipal election, Ontario's provincial government, led by Premier Doug Ford, introduced the Better Local Government Act. This legislation downsized the city's electoral wards right in the middle of the campaign and election period. The City of Toronto took legal action, citing infringement of the freedom of expression of candidates and voters and the violation of unwritten constitutional principles, such as the principle of democracy. The case ultimately reached the Supreme Court of Canada, which held that the Ford government did not violate the Constitution. Going further, the court emphasized that the interpretation of the Charter must begin with and be rooted in the text. Municipal powers are not mentioned anywhere in Canada's Constitution, except for under provincial heads of power. Principal DeRosier was a member of the Legislative Assembly of Ontario when the events transpired. We asked her to share her experience and speak to a recent publication in Osgood's Journal of Law and Social Policy, Deference to the Legislators, the case of the 2018 Ontario Better Local Government Act.
I was in the legislature when the Ford government introduced the bill that would, in the midst of an election, change the representation and cut down the size of council to 25 from 47. The article that I've written was very much about trying to reflect whether the legislature took account of the constitutional implications, because under Section 1, a government can always limit freedom of expression, they can always limit the scope of rights, but they must do so with rationality, they must do so in a justifiable manner in a free and democratic society. So my article aims to look at what type of deference should courts give to elected officials on issues such as freedom of expression. There's a theory they should do so if indeed the legislature took account and discussed and evaluated and really involved itself in the discussion of the potential violation of rights. And so what I've done is I reviewed all the transcripts of the debates surrounding the bill that was going to cut the number of wards in the city of Toronto. And I did so by looking at whether indeed the legislature engaged with the issue of freedom of expression. And my conclusion was, if they did so, they did so in a very peripheral way. Most of the debates were about the fact that the Ford government had never run on this, had never advertised to the general public that they were intending to cut down the number of wards, just because they never mentioned it during the electoral period. And we had just been through the elections. This element of surprise was really at the core of most of the arguments. People assumed that municipalities ought to be democratically run. And there was some debate as to the impact that transforming the election in the midst of it. And at that time, myself, I was quite critical of this. I had had the library of the legislature do the research, and it had never been done in Canada. And it had not been done elsewhere in the world. They could not find a case where you would change the rules during the election. And the reason why it was so dangerous, in my view, is that you could imagine in other times, if you accepted that, that some politicians may change the rules in the midst of an election to ensure that their preferred candidates got elected. So that was the danger, is that there ought to be a sanctity and integrity to the electoral process, and messing about it just seemed to me very dangerous.
The Supreme Court ultimately rejected Toronto's argument that Ontario's Better Local Government Act violated the unwritten constitutional principle of democracy. It held that unwritten principles cannot be used to invalidate legislation or narrow provincial authority. We asked Principal De Rosier if she considers the decision in this case to represent an ideological shift in how the Supreme Court is considering unwritten principles in their decisions.
Obviously, it's a 5-4 decision, so it's a very close decision. The dramatic shift, or the ways in which I am most concerned about, is not so much an unwritten principle, although I would have preferred that they be recognized in a more fulsome way. Mostly, I think, the freedom of expression description, the idea that because you needed a legislative framework to have municipal elections meant that it was infringing that legislative framework, was not an obvious freedom of expression violation. The reason why we have unwritten principles is because we want a growing constitution. We want a constitution that speaks all the time, that speaks in the 21st century, the same way it spoke in the 20th century. Unwritten principles allow us to reflect on fundamental values, such as protection of minorities. I've used the unwritten principles of protection of minorities to advocate for better protection, or at least a sense of wary every time that the government takes aim at minorities. I think we'll see in 10 years whether or not this case will have legs and will be determinative. I hope that there will be some parts of it that will be changed over time, because I think both on the freedom of expression part, on the unwritten constitution, and even the framing of the powers of municipalities, there ought to be evolution of that thinking. And the Supreme Court in the past has changed its mind, and I'm hoping that in the long run that they will do so on these three aspects.
The Supreme Court also rejected Toronto's claims regarding freedom of expression, reasoning that the right to vote in elections does not extend to the municipal level because municipalities lack constitutional standing. In recent discussions surrounding elections across the globe, electoral rights and legitimate democratic expression have been at the forefront. We asked Principal DeRosier to comment on the importance of democratic expression at the municipal level and on the impact she thinks this case will have on freedom of expression more generally.
In a way, I think we should protect democratic expressions everywhere. We should certainly be very concerned about not recognizing the importance for a democracy to have a wide protection of democratic expression. It's important to recognize how much of the fabric and the values of a society are reflected in the way in which it is governed. And a governance that's rooted in democracy does require democratic expression at all levels of its governance. I don't think we should overread the case either. It is a case about a very particular point in time where you have a government that decides to interfere directly in an election. My hope is that the lesson from it is that even if it is constitutional, it really is not a good idea because it does raise the prospect of illegitimate elections. Because if you have a power that interferes in the integrity of the electoral process, it looks like you're toying with it, that you're undermining it. I think the legitimacy of elections, the way in which we do want elections that continue to be seen as legitimate, are important. I think we've seen in the States when people start debating the legitimacy of elections, how much damage it can do to the well-functioning of a society. We have to continue to argue and be vigilant about freedom of expression, particularly democratic expression. We have to continue to forcefully argue for its strength, for its respect by all decision makers. And that will be what I will continue to do.
The decisions of municipal governments have a large impact on our day-to-day lives. They deliver essential services like public transport, waste disposal, municipal parks, and play an important role in tackling large societal issues like poverty and climate change. In order to protect their autonomy and allow for creative decision-making, we asked Principal DeRosier how to best empower cities to ensure that they can serve their constituents with minimal interference.
There's a couple of avenues that are possible. If you argue, as I do, that there is room for interpretation in our constitution and it should evolve with time to recognize the more important role of cities for the well-being of Canada, then you may want to put forward a theory of subsidiarity that would protect the exercise of municipal powers, reflecting that unless there is an inability to act, provinces should not interfere in municipal affairs. You know, putting the burden on the government to justify why it interferes in municipal affairs, as opposed to just tolerating it and asking no questions. So that would be one theory, one legal theory. I'm continuing to try to put it forward and think that it would allow as well a more nuanced approach, because the principle of subsidiarity just does not treat every problem the same and does not treat every municipality the same. Some municipalities are not as well equipped to deal with some issues, and therefore the intervention of the province may be required on human rights and protection of minorities and so on. The second avenue I think that exists is one that some provinces have tried to do, which is to frame the powers of some municipalities, the city of Montreal or the city of Calgary or Vancouver, for example, with legal language in the act that does protect the city, that gives them a scope of powers. And it's not foolproof, because as the case demonstrates, if a province decides to change even that statute that gives all these powers, it could. But I think the political price is higher during the time that there is no obvious conflict and the municipalities could actually develop a scope of power and ability to plan and to do good things and to deliver on results that could be seen as legitimate and appropriate. Eventually, if provincial governments start thinking that they ought not to interfere in municipal affairs unless there's a good reason to do that, it could even become a constitutional convention. So I think we have to be a bit more creative and imaginative if we recognize that we do have a governance issue here And if we want a prosperous Canada, we need to ensure that municipalities are able to deliver on their promises. Finally, I think constitutional amendment is always on the table. It's a complicated process, but there may be new avenues that are being experimented by provincial constitutions, for example, as Quebec is doing now.
The principle of subsidiarity is compelling because it calls for decisions to be made by the level of government closest to citizens. This concept is already reflected in our federal and provincial divisions of powers. Some advocates for reform have even pushed this idea one step forward. They argue that since municipal decision-making has such a large impact on the daily lives of residents, that all residents should be given the right to vote in municipal elections, regardless of their citizenship status. We asked Principal DeRosier her views on extending voting rights to non-citizens.
Yes, I'm very much in favor of that. How cities are run, the idea of giving, for example, permanent residents the right to vote in municipal elections, or having a rank ballot, which the City of London was exploring, the idea of creating a framework for legitimacy for themselves, for their own actions with the people that reside in the city, makes perfect sense. And why not respect that? If I'm running in institutions like, I'm the dean of the law school, and I decide to give international students the right to vote on something, it makes perfect sense because I want to hear what they have to say on the graduate program and so on. Why should I be prevented from giving them a right to vote when it matters? I want to hear from them. And I think similarly, cities where some large parts of the city of Toronto, for example, people are not citizens. Large part of it are permanent residents and people that have just arrived from different countries. You want them to participate in municipal life. To give them the right to vote is a way to engage them in the development of the city and ensure the legitimacy of the decisions that you make. Better decisions, the broader the number of voters that are behind it. So I think that's the reason why municipalities thought about this. And I think it indeed is a very good idea.
While this episode described a contentious battle between the City of Toronto and the provincial legislature, generally provincial and municipal governments work well together. And in other decisions, the Supreme Court has invoked the principle of subsidiarity in defending municipal lawmaking powers, recognizing the importance of government action at all levels of government for pressing matters such as environmental protection. To conclude, we asked Principal DeRosier which she found to be the most important takeaways from our discussion.
It is important to look critically at our constitutional arrangements to see that there is potential for improvement. We feel a little bit locked down because we went through attempt at amending the constitutions that did not turn out to happen. But some of the theories and some of the thinking that went either in Meech Lake or even in Charlottetown, in Meech Lake there was the idea of the distinct society and limitations on the spending power. In Charlottetown, there was the idea of Indigenous self-government. Well, these ideas, even though they did not get enshrined in the Constitution, have become part, even found themselves in the language used by the Supreme Court. We live in a deliberative society, so ideas evolve and should continue to evolve. The role of municipalities is essential to a healthy country. More so, we look internationally how important they have become as both agents of change for climate change and also places where deep inequalities are lived. So it is important that we reflect on how to empower municipalities so that they actually do a good job for all of us.
On behalf of the McGill Law Journal, we'd like to graciously thank our guest, Principal Natalie DeRosier, for having shared her thoughts and expertise on constitutional law and municipal empowerment. To read more about unwritten constitutional principles, check out Volume 65, Issue 2 of the McGill Law Journal, a special issue from 2019 that included two articles cited by the Supreme Court in Toronto and Ontario.
Thank yous are also due to Alexander Shamiluev for our theme music. This podcast was produced by Kira Chadwick and Dante Trunzo with the help of Hannah Rioseco. All of our podcasts can be found free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on our website at lawjournal.mcgill.ca. We welcome comments on our podcast on all platforms, on our Facebook page, on Twitter, and via email at journal.law@mcgill.ca. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon.